So after Marguerite Alzasa made history in her first year as head coach by winning the NCAA Division I National Championship, her team went on to get upset in the first round of the NCAA tournament just a year later. How she has chosen to respond, to process it, to support her team and grow through it, well, I think it's just a testament to her character and her leadership. And you'll see that in today's conversation as she's going to tell us about that story. As well, she'll be sharing some ways they support players emotionally, how she gets support on her journey, and she'll be sharing her perspective on effective coaching and misperceptions around coaching. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butterick. I started this podcast in 2017 to help listeners grow as a leader and build a stronger team culture. In addition to this podcast, I'm a leadership coach, culture consultant, and the author of The Culture System and the Sports Parent Solution. To learn more about how my business, TOC, can support you and your organization, visit tocculture.com. My Twitter is at JP Nurbin, and my Instagram is at TOC Culture. To learn more about Betsy and her work as a leadership coach and facilitator, go to BetsyButterick.com, and her Instagram is at Betsy_thecoachescoach.
I want to ask you another question that's kind of related to this too, because I think one of the things that we run into with, you know, again, with coaches is that kids these days, right, are seen as being less resilient, maybe than when I started 20 years ago. They might be able to take coaching differently, disappointment differently, a coach's decision differently. Parents had a different role 20 years ago than they do now. So there's lots of things that sort of play into the dynamics of building resiliency among young people, particularly through sport. And I think today it's almost like the paradigm or the pendulum has swung all the way over here to say that it's the coaches who is responsible for how a player feels and how a player's confidence and how a player enjoys the game. And, you know, if it's not working for a player, it often comes back on the coach. What are you doing wrong, or what do you need to be doing differently? But you and I know, like, the real world doesn't work that way, right? Like, my boss isn't solely responsible for how I feel on a day-to-day basis. And so there is some responsibility in the player there. And I'm just curious, from your experience, like, how do you try to balance what's the coach's role to support players when they're going through adversity, and what's the player's responsibility to have to really deal with some of those things and hopefully become stronger through it?
My first inclination is, and maybe how we see our role, it's like, it is our responsibility as a staff to create an environment that is safe, to create an environment that is fun, create an environment that is supportive. We have to admit and accept that the variance of how players feel within that environment is going to be constantly in flux. And when we talk about their responsibility, we're like, it's their responsibility to be honest. It's their responsibility to be vulnerable, in the sense of, when something's not going well, we expect them to come to us for help. We don't really talk a lot about resilience, in that it's like, I think it's unfair to talk about resilience if you're not providing a lot of support. This is also what I found to be a really different take on resilience and how to build resilience kind of in this new generation. I think there's been, over the last, you know, decades, whatever, that like, resilience is built through going through hard things. And I don't know if I fully agree with it. Like, you can't control going through hard things. Hard things are going to happen, whatever, whatever. I think our staff goes down the path more so of, like, resilience is built by having a ton of support, and resilience is built by having a, like, an environment where you can be open and ask for that support. And so we kind of go the opposite direction, where it's like, we build up our players so much that then when they face the hard thing, they're kind of drawing from, like, a really full tank, one, and then two, they know that if they're going down, they can ask for help around them, as opposed to, like, you've gone through something really hard and now the strong survive, or whatever, whatever. We don't really take that approach. Sometimes we'll say, yeah, you know what, this, you're going to learn through this. But I've always felt like, times I've felt where I can go through hard things is when I feel the most supported, or when I feel my best, as opposed to, like, if I'm exhausted and I'm feeling worn down or whatever, like, the smallest thing sets me off. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm not being resilient in that moment. I just might not have much to draw from. And so I think the resilience question is really curious with this new generation. And I think for our group, like, you see it in really hard moments on the field. We also have to in our situation is very different too, in that like we may go all the way to the Final Four and not really have faced a lot of adversity. So we have to just find different ways to build resilience that don't really have to do with going through hard times, because we just might not face them very often. And so the approach that fits our group more is what I've been talking about, which is like create an environment that's so strong, so fun, so supportive that when they face the hard thing, they're like, oh yeah, I can do this. I got everyone around me. I feel good. As opposed to like, oh yeah, just like before. Cause we may not get the before very often. But it's really interesting, I think. And this is, I think when you look at kind of quote unquote old school coaches versus this new generation, like this is a really big thing that needs to be addressed, because the way in the past, maybe that we thought resilience was built, it may not, it just might not apply as well to the new generation of student athletes.
All right, just a quick timeout to tell you about my latest book, The Sports Parent Solution, Proven Strategies for Transforming Parents from Obstacles to Allies. This groundbreaking book gives you the strategies and methods you need to transform the parent culture in your team, allowing you to better support each athlete's growth, improve your team's performance, and create an extraordinary experience for everyone involved. It's available on Amazon and Apple Books. You can learn more about it and download the bonuses at my website, tocculture.com.
That's such an important point. And I think, as you mentioned, unique perhaps in that perspective of how do we build resilience? How do we talk about resilience? And are we focusing on support? Especially when you layer onto it that your team may not face those hard things with the frequency that they might need to build resilience. So if that's not part of the equation, what else can we do? Because you mentioned hard things, we're going to talk about hard things. Year one, you win a national championship. Year two, ranked number one, you're out in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Talk to us a little bit about how you had that conversation following that early exit with your team.
Yeah, there are moments in my new role as a head coach that I long for my old role as an assistant. This was definitely one of them. Like, I was like, oh, great. Oh, I'm talking. Okay, sounds good. And what I said after the game, so directly after, was one, like everyone's crying, everyone's upset. And I said, like, of course you're upset. One, this is a huge disappointment. Like no one wants to go out this way, but soccer itself is such a weird game in that like this happens. It's not like some other sports where it's like fairly consistently the better team wins. Like this happens quite often, it feels, where like in this game, we outshot the other team 22-2 and we lost 1-0 in the last 3 minutes. So it's like, this was a heartbreaking loss, but it's also part of the fabric of our sport. So we kind of acknowledge that piece. I also acknowledge like nothing I say in these next 5 minutes is really going to make you feel better. And I said, partly why I'm saying it is to make myself feel better. And I'm just going to own that. Like, because nothing I say is going to help you sleep tonight. But these are the things that I'm going to remind myself tonight when I'm trying to sleep. And I know it's not going to happen, but these are the things I'm going to tell myself. And what I told them was like the first, I was like, you're upset because what we have here is so special. And I was like, you look at the players around us, like we have been so fortunate as a staff to coach this group. Like every single player here means so much to us. And that's why we're upset, because we don't get to continue on. And it's kind of the end of this team. And that, college is weird that way too, where like your team changes every year fairly significantly. So we just acknowledge like the reason you're upset is because it is disappointing, because this team shouldn't be out, because a lot of you probably feel like it's your fault. So of course you're upset. But again, if you didn't care, and if we didn't do such a good job of creating something so special, like it wouldn't hurt this bad. So you have to just kind of own that. It's not gonna make you feel better, but that's what it is. Then we talked about like what this team did that was so special. And this year, I thought we set a standard for how college soccer can be played. So there's often word kind of out in the world that like because of how college soccer is run, the length of the season, the kind of nature of the game, it's really difficult to play kind of this quote unquote beautiful brand of soccer. It's very transitional, very physical, all these things. And I thought this year we proved that you could. And so I'm like, you guys, like the coolest part about this season is like we showed the country that you can play this way. Like at our level, you can really play this way. And I'm like, and to me, that is for our program even more impactful than what we did last year. I'm Like, because we set the stage for how this program can play over the next 5 years. And that's something like that this group will be known for. And so those are the things that we kind of hit on. And then, of course, we just thanked everyone. And we said, like this is a time that you come together. And I said, it feels like the end of the world now. I was like, but if we've done a good job in our program, then in a week, you're going to want to come back. And I was like, and I feel really confident that we've done that, where as a staff, and I think I said this to the group, I'm like, as a staff, one of our main objectives is that like every single player who goes through our program loves the game. And I'm like, and you love it when it's great and you love it when it hurts. And today it hurts. I'm like, but if we've done our job, in a week's time, you'll all want to come back. And I think that like, I think that's what made me, I was in a very dark place, I will admit, for like 48 hours, but what kind of pulled me out of the darkness was, I'm like, you know what, like every single kid, even though we've gone through this, every single kid loves our program. Every single kid still loves the game. And I'm like, this will not define how you think about soccer. And so those, that was really hard. Who knows? I think the speech itself, whatever, but what was really cool is we did have to take about 2 weeks off, a week off for NCAA rules, and then a week off for Thanksgiving. And when we did come back and train, we had a recruit on campus actually. And she said, she's like, you would never know that this team just like suffered the biggest upset of the year, because they were having a blast. Like they were all so excited to come back. Like the energy was as high as it ever been in practice. Like everyone was just happy to be around each other and back training. So in that way, I think like the work we do every single day kind of set us up to go through that massive failure. But I think in the same line of what I was talking about, like that to me, that's resilience, but that was not built through going through really hard times. That was built by creating an environment that's like super positive and fun and supportive.
That's awesome. And thank you. It pains me a little to ask that question just because, you know, I think any coach listening is like, oh, I know that feeling, you know, in whatever.
Hey, we did it to ourselves, you know.
And it, like you said, that's the beautiful part about the game, and the frustrating part, the love and the loathe, is that can happen. And that's part of why we play, is for that possibility. So I appreciate you going down that path. I think we've talked a lot during this podcast about support, and about the way that you as coaches have been intentional about creating that sport with the student athletes in your program. Shift gears, if you will, and talk a little bit about what is support separate from maybe the people in your life. What does support look like for you as a coach? The nature of college coaching especially is changing, and I'd say the asks being made in that part of our resume that says other duties as assigned continues to grow. What does support look like for you both in and out of season with how you prepare to show up and give your best?
Yeah, well, my life has been a whirlwind, but there have been some constants that have been really helpful. Obviously, I know aside from the people, but I do have to shout out my husband because he is a huge, huge, huge support to me. During season, we call him the emotional support husband. Out of season, you know, it's different. But he does an incredible job of recognizing, like, also he's a soccer coach, so it helps. Recognizing the moments that I either just need to be heard, recognize the moments maybe I need to rant, or recognize the moments where it's like, look, I really need help finding a solution. And he's been huge in that. He picks up so much slack, like as far as the house goes, and part we have two giant dogs, like all of those things. In moments where I really need him to step up, he does that, and he does it consistently and like very selflessly. And so in that way, like, and I say he's been consistent because we've moved and we've done new jobs and all this stuff over the last couple of years. And he's really helped me kind of bring my best self to work every single day. The other thing, like I have to be very intentional about how I manage my time, and allowing myself to shut down, allowing myself to like take a walk, or I like to go to yoga. And the reason I like to go to yoga is it's like, it's hard enough that it demands my intention, but not so hard that my body hurts after. And it's like this perfect little balance of like, an hour away where I'm working hard. I'm kind of just like in my own body at that moment. And I don't really have the luxury. I'm just trying to get through it sometimes. So I don't really have the luxury of going through what I'm going through at work. So that's been really helpful. Someone, one of my coaching friends asked me the other day, like, how do you stay so calm? Like, what do you do? And I was like, yeah, maybe it's the yoga. I don't know. The other piece is I have a lot of people around me that are not involved at UCLA, but are either other coaches, or my mom's a great resource. She's kind of an educator by trade. She just retired after like a 30, 35 year career as a high school teacher. And so she's also a great sounding board for me, that like when things get a little tough, because she always looks at it kind of without the soccer piece, which is nice. And she looks at it very much of just like, okay, Marg, like this kid is having a hard time. Like, how can we do this? And so she's been a great kind of support for me. And all like all of those kind of methods and techniques and people, I think they're the ones that really deserve so much credit, because they're the reason that I can come to work every day kind of calm and in the mindset of, you know what, we're going to figure it out.
And such an important mindset to have. You mentioned your mom as an educator, and I know how important the coach's educator piece is for you. And I remember a story from last year's convention where I think you were on a panel and someone in the room was commenting on what they observed during the national championship game and said, you know, I was watching and there you were on the sideline, and I was curious when you were going to get up and actually start coaching the game. And you had a really interesting response that I'd love for you to share with the audience, if you will.
Yeah, well, my first gut reaction was like, excuse me, but I regained my composure. And what I think I said was like, there's a misconception maybe of like what coaching is. And to me, coaching is not standing up and screaming and yelling at the referee or whatever it is. My approach more so is like, my job is to observe and analyze and find solutions. Personally, I can't do that screaming and yelling. Other people may be able to do that. That's not how I operate. So what you'll see on the sideline often is our staff kind of coming together, recognizing what's working versus what's not working. Is it a personnel or something that can be solved by personnel? So we'll just make a sub and then maybe that will help. Or is it something that needs to be solved by a tactical adjustment? And so what people may see is us just kind of sitting and talking quietly amongst each other. For us, that's coaching, because that's finding solution on game day. What they don't see, of course, is like all the work that went into that moment. A lot of it is probably more active, maybe you could say, than what they're observing in that moment. You know, in training, we're a lot more active. We insert ourselves a lot more into the session and into certain moments. There is not screaming and yelling, but, you know, we're projecting for sure to kind of make that happen and kind of guide our players through those moments. The other piece that's really fascinating is like soccer, like the field is 80 yards wide and 120 yards long. If a player is 70 yards from me yelling at, they probably can't hear me. And especially in the national championship game, there's 10,000 fans cheering. It's like, they definitely can't hear me. So I'd be just screaming into the abyss for no reason. My mom often says this too. She's like, when she observes coaches, and she's just such a mom in that, like, when she comes to my games, I think she's mostly watching me on the sideline, because that's as moms do. And she says, I just feel like a lot of times when coaches are screaming, all they're doing is just expressing frustration. That's all they're doing. They're not yelling anything of substance. And so I really took that to heart, where I'm like, when something happens that is frustrating, like, that's not the moment to yell. All you're communicating to your team is that you're annoyed or frustrated. We look at it the other way, where it's like, okay, is that a one-off or is that happening consistently? If it's happening consistently, we need to either address it with the player, make a tactical change, or make a sub. And when you kind of boil it down to those things, then it's like, for our staff at least, screaming and yelling is just not very productive. So we don't do that.
So just a quick timeout in this conversation to tell you about why you should consider subscribing to the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, you'll receive a short article from Nate or myself, and you'll also receive the notes to each episode of the podcast, as well as our top 10 podcast episodes and my top 10 articles. Subscribe using the link in the description of this episode, or simply go to tocculture.com and click on newsletter.
When Betsy told me that story, I thought, that's exactly what I want to be as a coach. Like, I want to get to the game and be able to enjoy it, just watching it like everyone else, because our players are able to either one, be prepared for what's going to happen, or two, be empowered to make their own decisions and adjustments on the fly without the need for us. I feel like that's validation that we're actually doing our job, is that, as you said, we can just sort of sit back and observe and analyze. But I guess my question following that would be, how do you get to your players to a point where they're on the field and they're able to, you know, operate in the knowledge and preparation without necessarily being reliant on, you know, the remote control coaching, so to speak, from the sideline?
Yeah, I think there's two pieces. The first is preparing them tactically so that then when things are going well or aren't going well, they're able to make the adjustment because they can recognize what's going well or what's not, or what the solution really is. So we're very intentional in how we teach the game. And we kind of label it inviting strategic thinking. So we, when we talk about, okay, the other team has two forwards, they're likely going to press us this way. When we're teaching the team how to beat that, we are very open with the decision-making and why. Like, we're very open with the why. And if they have questions, we'll spend 5 minutes and talk them through it, because they need to know why we're trying to do something a certain way. Some of it is to isolate one player. Some of it's to isolate a certain space, whatever it is. And so what our goal was is exactly that. So that when something happens in the game you haven't seen before, you can solve it. We always tease them. We're like, I don't know why you're waiting to halftime to make the change. I'm like, I always say, I hope you would know better than me. I'm watching from the sideline and you're live time. Like, you should recognize the problem before I do, hopefully. And so we kind of give them that responsibility. We also give them the freedom to make that change. And we hopefully give them also like the knowledge base to see what has to happen. So there's that piece to it. The other piece is like just the empowerment to make the change and the willingness also to make a change. And we are very open about that, where it's like, we might say to the group, we want to press really high, but we tell them also in the pregame, we're like, if it's not working, we also expect you to change it. Like, that's part of what we're doing here. Like, we're going to go out with a game plan. We don't know if that's going to work. We don't know if the team's going to play us the same way. That's also, I think, a challenge to recognize in our position. It's like, we could play a team that for 10 games has played a certain way. When they play us, they could do something completely different. And so we have to kind of write that into our script. Like, this is what we think is going to happen. This could happen. Be looking for that. And then we kind of, like I said, put the responsibility of them, where it's like, if we've asked you to do something that's not working and you continue to do it, for us, that's the coaching point. Like, why did you keep doing it? That does not make any sense. Like, just because I said it, I'm like, I said it was wrong. Like, recognize that we're okay with being wrong, but we also want you to change it. And so I still don't think we're quite at that point. We always like get to this point right at the end of the season, and then our season ends, of like where we can really sit back and just enjoy the game. The other kind of way to look at it is the approach we take with our group is like, we're not trying to just coach players. We're kind of trying to train coaches. So the way we talk about the game, we basically just give them full insight into what we're thinking. And so when we come to a decision, we tell them exactly why. And I think by doing that and doing it consistently, then when they're in the game, they're looking at it kind of from a different lens, and they're looking for adjustments to be made.
Okay, just one more quick time to tell you about the TOC Transformational Coaching and Culture Certification. It's the most practical, comprehensive, and essential coach education on the market today. We offer 3 levels of certification, each taking up to 3 hours each, and they come with high-quality videos, digital resources to simplify the process of building your team's culture, and a group chat to ask me and other coaches questions as you go through the course. To learn more about this and my other online courses, go to tocculture.com.
We could probably spend a lot of time on this too, but I think the other thing that has been good for our group is just asking them, you know, if we show we're getting ready for a team tomorrow, they do something a little bit differently defensively, just asking them, what opportunities does that create for us? Before we just give them, here's what we're going to do, because we're trying to train their eyes and their decisions as much as we are the ability to execute those things once they see them.
Yeah, that was a really big change. And this is kind of going back to our first part of this conversation. Like, that was not a piece of coaching or blueprint that I really recognized before I kind of got into it. Kind of how our approach is maybe a little different than other staffs in the country at all different levels. This idea of like, we often, or hardly ever, I guess you could say, ask our players to do something without an explanation. Like, we're really trying to teach them to see the game in a strategic way, in a way that's way more tactically based than maybe what they're used to. Because we feel like that's going to be the key for them to play at the next level. Both whether that's in the pros or at an international level, like, they really have to understand the game at a higher sophistication. And so we kind of talk about it all the time. It's very much a consistent theme in how we lead the group.
And Marg, I'm a very visual thinker, but as you're talking, I'm picturing, you know, every so often now when I scroll on Instagram, I get this ad for a masterclass, and I'm listening to you just thinking like, oh my gosh, we're all, you know, audience members of this masterclass of quality coaching and what that looks like, what it doesn't look like, and what we stand to learn as coaches about the continuing evolution of this profession called coaching.
I want to ask you one more question, if you got a couple minutes here, and that is, what's your perspective on what effective leadership looks like at the players' level? I think a lot of times coaches think we want players that are going to hold each other accountable, you know, and that sometimes it just stops there, so that maybe they have to do less work enforcing standards or whatever the, you know, whatever the motivation might be. But, you know, when you've been on some highly successful teams, I'm sure as a player and also as a coach, what has effective leadership looked like at the players' level?
Yeah. A couple components I can think of. The one really important one is accessibility. Like, you have to be someone that people can approach. You have to be somebody that people can bring issues to, or like, if you're going to kind of insert yourself in a situation, you have to be someone that's well accepted. So for our players that we recognize some kind of in leadership qualities in, we talk to them quite a bit about building relationships, kind of putting themselves out there, being that person to kind of in good times and bad times, being really accessible. That's something we talk about as a staff too, but I think sometimes players maybe don't value it quite as much as they need to. I know we talked a lot about consistency today. Consistency is huge. I think if you're asking a player on your team to be a leader, you'll find yourself often asking the most consistent players. And that's consistency in how they perform, but it's also consistency in how they approach training, or consistency with kind of the attitude that they bring. I think predictability is a huge factor in like who people gravitate towards as leaders. And I think that's also a big thing we don't talk about much as people in more like leadership positions, for instance, coaches. Like, our players should be able to predict in a positive way our response to most things. Like, I think players, both either peer-to-peer or to coaches, like, they, what deters them from coming to somebody with a problem is they don't know how they'll respond. And so that's something we talk about a lot. And then the last piece I would say is leaders need to know that, like, it's okay to not have the answers. The leadership is not always providing answers. Most of the time, leadership is providing support. So it's okay to say, you know what, like, that's a great question. We're going to figure that out. but I think sometimes leaders are nervous to step into a role because they feel like they don't have all the answers. Like, how, I don't know, I'm a sophomore, how am I supposed to, like, it's like, yeah, of course you don't know, but that's not really the point. The point is just to provide support, to diffuse the situation, and then kind of move on from there. So those things I think are really, really key. And when we talk to the leaders in our group, those are typically the things we're trying to kind of guide them towards as they kind of embrace their leadership roles.
And just to follow that quickly, you mentioned before how the roster changes so much from one year to the next. Are there other things that you do intentionally to try to develop those leaders, you know, because they're going to turn over, whether it's graduation or, you know, what have you? Are there other things as a staff that you're doing to try to help develop them?
Yeah, so informally, we talk about leadership quite a bit whenever we do individual meetings. We kind of empower all of our players to take some sort of leadership role. And sometimes that role is just like, okay, we need to get you to a point where you're your best self at training. Like sometimes it's as simple as that. But, you know, other times it can be, hey, look, like you're in a position that your class itself really looks up to you. So these are kind of what we would hope to expect from you in that role. We don't need you to talk to the whole group, but like when your best friend doesn't go to class, like it'd be really nice to get her there, you know. Other people, it's kind of more like you're a captain on the team. This is what we expect. More formally, we have kind of a leadership group. And so it's usually 7 or 8 players. Some of them are kind of more developed leaders. Some of them are kind of leaders in training, you could call them. And so we have many conversations through the year of talking about the things I just talked about, like how, okay, sometimes we might say like, if we have a leader who's not quite fully fledged, we might ask her to address a player or a teammate about something, but we might say, you know what, Betsy, can you go with her and give her a little support, like kind of little training wheels as they do some of these things. And so, yeah, like formally we kind of have a leadership group that has some more developed leaders and ones that are kind of learning the ropes. And then informally, I would say leadership is always a topic of conversation in almost every conversation we have with players.
Before we wrap up today, if folks want to know more either about you and or the program, where would you recommend that they go?
This is probably where I need to do some personal development. As of right now, I think like if you go to just our website, UCLA Bruins, you can get kind of the latest and greatest on what we're doing, especially on the field. I will say also, if you follow UCLA Athletics through all social media platforms, at times they do some incredible features on our players and on our staff, just kind of in what they're doing, either kind of special talents on the field, but some really cool things that they're doing off the field. The other thing is our staff's been very, very fortunate to be asked to be on various podcasts like this one. And we try whenever we are asked to be like very open and honest about how we go about things. So that's a great way to get some insight. And then any opportunity, I think, for coaching education is a great one. Coming up, like we'll be at the United Soccer Coaches Convention and I have to do a couple sessions and I believe my assistants might be on a couple panels as well. And so those types of things are also really great to kind of get to know what we're doing and how we're doing things a little differently.
Marguerite, we could do this for another couple hours, I'm pretty sure. But for the sake of everyone's time, we so appreciate you giving us yours and the conversations that you've shared, the transparency, the honesty, the vulnerability to enable coaches to be them best selves, or their best selves, and just change the way that we coach the game in a way that is really holistic and positive and supportive. I know we talked a lot about that word support, but again, just so much gratitude for everything that you've shared and the way that you show up as a coach for the players in your program and for other coaches as well. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I know you feel you didn't have a huge role in my transition to being a head coach, but I definitely didn't feel that way. So I appreciate, you know, all the support you've given me over the last year or so.
My pleasure.
So as we wrap up that conversation with Marguerite, personally, I just love how she points out that when coaches are screaming, coaches are just expressing frustration. That's so true when I think back on my own experience as a coach. Now, some people might just say, well, hey, that's just her style. She's not a yeller. But I think Betsy does a great job of just labeling it for what it really is. Best practices. Like it's the best way of coaching. Hopefully, if you are still holding on to that habit of yelling at your players, well, I hope that you'll examine that, reflect on that, and work on that. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We hope you will join us for more future episodes. Next episode, Nate, Betsy, and I will be getting together to talk about authenticity in coaching. So be sure to subscribe to the podcast, our newsletter to get the notes. You can do that at tocculture.com. And also leave us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this episode if you felt it was valuable.